But we are in the second half of Esther chapter 1 tonight. So let's jump in here. Alexa, can you start us off? Well, I guess let's back up for just a tidge. We met two characters last week. One of them is not going to be in the story much longer, unfortunately, but we'll talk about why. Cam, who's one of the characters that we met last week?
Can't say his name, but King A.
King A, yes. King Ahasuerus, or I can't remember his actual long name, which is his Persian name, and then Xerxes is his Greek name. What's funny, though, that I learned, too, this week is if you translate his name into English, it sounds very similar to King Headache, which is kind of funny. Like, that wasn't what the author had in mind, but still. But so Ahasuerus is his, hold on. Ahasuerus is his Hebrew name, okay? He's not a Hebrew, okay? The Hebrews are the people of God. But that is his Hebrew name. Okay, which is ironic because Mordecai is Mordecai's Hebrew name. Haman is Haman's Hebrew name. But Cam, what about Esther? Is Esther her Hebrew name?
No.
No, it's not. Abigail's over there like, mm-mm, it is not her Hebrew name, which is ironic, right? But that's part of the point of this entire story, okay? So more on that to come. So we met King A, and then Abigail, do you remember the other person that we met last week?
Are you talking about Queen Vashti?
I am talking about Queen Vashti, and I'm glad you called her Queen Vashti, which kind of is important going into the rest. See, Abigail, you're going to be a natural, which is why that plays into the rest of this section, okay? And we'll talk about why that's important. So we met Queen Vashti. So Alexa, in chapter one, King A, he's trying to do something. What is his overall? Was that an animal?
Yes, it's my cat.
That's awesome. Who is your cat? What is your cat's name?
This is Mozzie.
Come here. Mozzie. Nice.
He's very cute.
Dude, he is very cute. I didn't know. So, Barry, you can have like cats on campus? I won't tell.
We're not supposed to have him, but yeah. We're getting him certified, I think, like next week.
Oh, cool. Okay. Yeah. Fair enough. Yeah. Yeah. There you go. Certified. Perfect. No, that's great. No, that sounds awesome. Well, hi, Mozzie. Is Mozzie the Hebrew name or his Persian name, or is that?
I have no idea. Honestly, everybody in this house calls him something different. Yeah. But I think that's what is on his vet papers. He came with the name Avery. So,
okay. Yeah, yeah. I like Mozzie. Mozzie works. Yeah. So, okay. Alexa, what is King A's goal with what he's doing? What's going on? What's his goal? What's the big picture here?
I have no idea because I wasn't here last week because I was moving back in.
God. You're right. I'm so used to you being here. Okay.
Yeah, I was moving back in last week.
No, that's fine. That's fine. Let's loop it back. Well, this will be good for you. So we met King A, we met Vashti. So Cam, what is King A's goal? What's the big picture of what he's trying to do in chapter one?
Pretty much, she's throwing a party for pretty much every official high-ranking person that he can in order that they may side with him for when they go to war.
Yes. So Esther was written it's not written live. It's not live tweeted, right? It's written after the fact, right? And it's written from the purview of King A's goal is to drum up support, uniting. Remember, what's stronger, five or one? So you have five, and then you have one, right? That's the goal. He wants to unite Persia together, all 127 provinces, verse one, so that they can fight Greece in a united front, okay? Not the musical, the country, right? So they're going to go to war with Greece, and he wants to unite, and he decides to unite them, and Cam already kind of said it, Abigail, but what's his plan? What's he doing to unite them? Is he giving a speech? What's he doing to bring everybody together?
He's throwing a feast that lasts 180 days.
Yes. Feast is, give me like a kid slang for feast. This isn't a feast. Feast is like something that Shakespeare does. What is this?
A party.
This is an absolute rager, okay? This is insane. Everything, like the cups are made of gold. This is crazy. He's showing his wealth. He's showing his power. You've got to support me. I can give you anything you want. I'm the most powerful person in the world. Of course, you've got to support me. And after, and how long, okay, let's do, Cam, how long does this party go for?
180 days.
Half a year, 180 days. I can't do anything for half a year. And this guy rages for half a year. And then he throws another party for 7 more days, right? And at the end of this party, disaster strikes, right? King A is completely inebriated. But we learned last week too, this wasn't just like a bunch of bros having a party. What was the significance of the alcohol? Abigail, do you remember this? There's more to it than just let's get as drunk as we can. There's kind of a religious aspect to what's going on here, maybe. No worries. Cam, help her out.
Isn't it when they're drunk, I guess, they're closer to the gods?
Yes, good. It was this pagan. I was like, oh yeah, of course. It's this pagan deal where any kind of ecstasy puts you, any kind of getting out of yourself gets you closer to the gods. And we also remember how King Ahasuerus's his palace was described in such detail, the same kind of detail as the temple and the tabernacle. It's this, there's a religious tone going on here as well, possibly. Okay. So there's all this inebriation. In his inebriation, Abigail, who does King A invite to the party?
His wife.
His wife. Yeah, we'll see. His so-called wife, Queen Vashti. Cam, why does he invite Queen Vashti specifically?
Pretty much so he could show her off to everyone.
So he can show her off, right? The worst men, the worst, right? So if you look in verse 11, to bring Queen Vashti before the king with her royal crown in order to show the peoples and the princes, blah, 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 blah. Well, in verse 4, King A is taking all his property, his wealth, his money, and he is showing the riches of his glory to his people. It's the same verb. He is showing off his wife, like Abigail said, in the same way that he shows off his property. Does that make sense? And Vashti, shockingly, is none too pleased. So Vashti refuses to show. She refuses to come out, which is super, yes, Alexa, it is like an eyebrow raise moment. Because again, Abigail, what is the whole point of this huge party? What is King A trying to do? What's the goal?
He's trying to get people to support him and go to war with him.
Go to war, risk your life for me. But Cam, why is this now so disastrous?
It's the fact that even his own wife won't support him. So like, why would anyone else?
This is literally the worst thing that could happen. Which, by the way, let's go back and talk about genre. Abigail, do you remember what genre Esther is?
Comedy.
It's a comedy, okay? Not like, you know, Adam Sandler or whatever like that, but there's an irony, there's a humor throughout the whole thing, which is kind of cool because the Bible, not a trick question, Alexa, the Bible is ultimately written by who?
Ultimately. Do you want God?
That's okay. Exactly right. The Bible's written by God. Esther is a comedy, which tells us something about God. Does that make sense? Like, he's holy. He's majestic. He's perfect, but he's not this like solemn, you know what I mean? Like he's not, I mean, he is that, but he's not just that. Like there's humor. There's this aspect to him. So it's just a cool kind of side note there. So Queen Vashti refuses to show. She has embarrassed the king in front of everyone. This disaster has struck. And again, there's an irony. This man and all his power and all his wealth on the outside, on his Instagram page, it's the coolest thing in the world. But internally, his family life is a disaster. His internal life is a mess. So we get into, and it only gets worse from here. So we get into the next section here. Cam, can you read 13 and 14. And I'll help you with the names.
Okay. The king consulted the wise men who understood the times, for it was his normal procedure to confer with the experts in law and justice. The most trusted ones were...
All right. You know what? You really don't have to know any of these people except for the last one, who is Mamukin.
Mamukin.
Okay. Yep. And you just keep going.
And they were the seven officials of Persia and Media.
Media.
Who had personal access to the king and occupied the highest positions in the kingdom.
Perfect. All right. So now, again, Abigail, you already said it. Who is Queen Vashti really? She's his what?
Wife.
She's his wife. So, ladies, when you are looking for a husband, or when a husband is looking for you, right, when you guys are trying to figure that out, if you guys have an argument, who are probably the only two people who need to discuss said argument later behind closed doors? Cam, if you and Jackson have gotten into it, heaven forbid, who are the only two people that really need to discuss this argument?
It should be us.
You two. And Alexa, instead, what does King A do to resolve this quarrel between he and his wife?
He must just gets everyone and their moms to decide.
Yeah, he forms a committee to figure out, like, gosh, guys, what are we going to do? Like, let's call this quorum to order, okay? So King A has a problem with his wife, and instead of pulling her into a private room to talk, to apologize, hopefully, he calls a committee. Now, think about this. This is a huge theme in the Book of Esther. King A, in all his power, he never acts for himself. He's the most powerful man, arguably, on the planet, and he is totally passive the entire story. He never makes his own decisions. He never leads anybody. He just goes with whatever his people tell him. Okay. This is kind of another theme, and we'll get to it later in this section. Look at what a disaster is when mankind is given absolute power. We just have no idea what to do with it. When a man is turned into a god, when a man is turned into an absolute king, he just collapses on himself, which is ironic because so many rulers throughout history have wanted absolute power. And if you look back, these people are nuts. They're crazy because it just corrupts them. It completely destroys them. So we'll get into this later, okay? So just keep that in mind. Now, Cam's version said, what's interesting about these seven princes of Media? How are they related to the king, Cam, at the end of verse 14?
They had personal access to him.
Does anyone else have anything different than had personal access to him at the end of 14?
Alexa? I had special access.
Okay, okay, okay.
That's like the same thing.
Mine says who saw the king's face. Okay, is that what yours says, Abigail?
Yeah.
Saw the king's face? Okay, here's why this is important. This means they can go into the king's presence uninvited and unannounced. And I know that sounds so dumb in our day and age, but you got to remember this isn't America or the 21st century. This is the ancient world. To be the king was to be God, okay? You don't just go strolling up to these people. I mean, even today, you don't, like, for the most part, you don't just, like, waltz into your boss's office and, like, put your feet up. You know what I mean? Because he or she is your boss. Magnify that by, like, 50 billion, and that's ancient Persia. These are the only seven people in the nation who can just walk, and not that they would walk in and put their feet up, but it's this closeness, right? Now, also think back to when Moses is on Mount Sinai, he asks to see God's face. When Jacob is wrestling with God, he asks to see God's face. It's this idea of intimacy, of knowing them closely, okay? Which is the access that Jesus Christ has given us. Now we can go to God outside of the temple. It's this incredible, Tim Keller says, the only person who can wake a king up in the middle of the night for a glass of water is his child, right? We have that kind of access with God. It's this beautiful picture. So these guys have this deep closeness with King A. You also definitely probably don't want to date a guy who, when you are having trouble with him, he like calls his boys over to like chat about it. It's not what you want. So just kind of, that one's for free. Just kind of mark that off somewhere. Okay. So he calls a committee. They all come together to talk. Cam, can you just read 15?
The king asked, according to the law, what should be done with Queen Vashti since she refused to obey King A's command that was delivered by the eunuchs?
Eunuchs. So yeah, how could you forget the eunuchs, Cam?
Oh, no.
So we will review in just a minute. So first of all, not a trick question, Cam. Who says this quote in verse 15? Who says this?
The king.
And what does he call his wife?
Queen Vashti.
He calls her by her title. This is his wife. This is your wife. You see, and again, this is, we talked about this last week. One of the big themes of Esther is the breakdown in relationships between men and women, but also how they can be restored. And we'll see that with Esther and Mordecai. Now, they're not married, but we'll see their openness of communication, their honesty, their sacrificialness. Anyway, but he calls the queen by her title. That's not a good start, right? Not a good start. This whole thing is coming from a heart that really doesn't want any kind of reconciliation at all, okay? All right, so he calls her this, and so this message was delivered, Cam, by what group of people at the end of verse 15?
Eunuchs.
The eunuchs. Abigail. No, I'm not going to draw a picture. What is a eunuch? Oh, man, I thought this was like so impactful and crazy. Oh, don't worry. When I tell you, you'll remember.
I thought I wrote it down.
No, no worries. Well, you probably didn't just because it was so memorable at the time. Right. Alexa, do you know what a eunuch is?
Is it people who are like castrated? Or am,
yes,
I like, okay, yeah.
That is exactly, Abigail. That's exactly what it is. Eunuchs are men who, well, in this context, they were men who there was no risk of the queen committing adultery with them, right? Obviously. And it's this idea of you cannot be intimate with a woman who the king has been intimate with because he's God. You're not even allowed to hit on a woman who, or I don't know, hit on's probably not the best term, to pursue a woman, right? To court a woman who the king has been with, right? So they deliver by the, and keep that in mind because that's going to be huge later in the story. Cam, read 16.
Memucan?
Yep.
Okay. Said in the presence of the king and his officials, Queen Vashti has wronged not only the king, but all the officials and the peoples who were in every one of King A's provinces.
Okay. So we start to see that something's going on. They're having this like freak out moment where it's not just Vashti. Vashti hasn't just offended the king. She's offended every man in and all the officials throughout all 127 provinces, okay? Whatever's happened is going to have well, we know what's happened, but it's going to have national implications. It's going to be a disaster, okay? And let's find out why. Alexa, can you read 17 and 18?
For the queen's conduct will become known to all the women, and so they will despise their husbands and say, King Xerxes commanded Queen Vashti to be brought before him, but she would not come. This very day, the Persian and Median, mm-hmm, women of nobility who have heard about the queen's conduct will respond to all the king's nobles in the same way. There will be no end of disrespect and discord.
Okay, so let's back up a second. So Vashti refuses to show up for King A, or Xerxes, which is his Greek name. It's not a different person. We're all on the same page. But Cam, what are they afraid is about to happen, though? Like, based on these two verses.
Pretty much all the women in all the provinces will have the same idea and just refuse their husbands as well.
Yeah, this like Amazon mutiny is going to take place, and this female army is going to rise up and like create this national upheaval and destroy all the, like, none of them. And again, it's not like he asked her to go visit his family. He wanted to show her off, which is pretty icky, okay? And now, basically, they're afraid that none of the women are going to want to be used as objects by the men. What a disaster, right? So they're freaking out. But first of all, this shows us a few things, because this sounds patently ridiculous. Like, it all, it happened there. How is, and I think, again, this place is huge, 127 provinces. How in the world is everybody going to find out? I mean, there's no way. This is impossible. But first of all, it shows the role that royalty had in the ancient world, okay? The role of the king and queen affects the heartbeat of the entire country, okay? They, it, like, when the king dies, it's a day of national mourning, right? It's this, it's, we can't really appreciate that in our individualistic age, but in the ancient world, the heartbeat of the country was tied to the heartbeat of the ruler, okay? So there, this isn't totally out of left field. There's plenty of times where it says, and the king wept, and all of Israel wept with him. Because whatever's going on it with the king affects the entire country. Because again, the king is like God. The king is the closest thing to God, et cetera, et cetera. So, but also on the other side, this is clearly an overreaction. Nobody knows about this except for the people who were at the party. And it's the ancient world. There is no Twitter, right? There is no instant way for anybody to know about this. But look at how they freak out. Here's what we're getting to. This is a, this theme will come back. These men are obsessed with being honored. And look at how fragile their ego is, right? It's so shallow. They can't take, if you can't handle being disappointed one time, marriage is going to be a disaster, okay? For the men and the women, right? Because we're marrying people, right? And this is the most powerful guy in the entire kingdom. He has gold cups. He has pillars of marble. He has all these things. And yet one affront to him, and he calls a committee, and they're all whining and freaking out. It's this, he's only skin deep, okay? He's so shallow, all right? So let's see what they decide to do to fix this. Abigail, can you just read 19?
If it please the king, let a royal order go out from him, and let it be written among the laws of the Persians and the Medes,
yep.
Medes, so that it may not be repealed, that Vashti is never again to come before King King A.
yes. And then mine says, and let the king give her royal position to another who is better than she. So let's stop here. This is just an absolute disaster. How are they going to fix this? What's the plan here? What's going on?
Pretty much their only solution is that Queen Vashti cannot see the king anymore, and she will be replaced.
Yes, she's going to be replaced, okay? Interchangeable, apparently. But how are they going to do it? Alexa, what do they release? What's going on?
They're going to release a royal decree to find a woman better than her.
Yeah, so they're going... Oh, was that was your Alexa, wasn't it? That happened in my house too. That is too funny, dude. Oh, we're gonna fix it. What's your middle name, Alexa?
I'm not doing this again.
You have to. Okay. I'm gonna call you Queen A. Okay. That's what I'm gonna call you that instead. Okay. No, it's okay. Cause I had one in my apartment, Abigail. Uh-huh. And last semester, every time I called on her, it would be like, we have no findings for Ruth, chapter 4. That's too funny, dude. So he's going to send out a royal order. Now, there's a couple things. We're going to get into how stupid that is. But first of all, we'll try it. Alexa, what is one of the stipulations about this order? Yes, Vashti has to be blah, blah, but what's the nature of the order? What's something that's special about this order?
It cannot be repealed.
It can't be repealed. Okay, first of all, Abigail, why is giving out orders that cannot be repealed a terrible idea? It doesn't even have to be this order. An order that you cannot take back ever. Why would that be a bad idea? What if I, well, let's see, Cam, help her out. Why would it be a terrible idea to issue orders that can never be taken back?
Because you can't take it back.
Because you can't fix it. Like, what if, like, what if you, what if I issue an order? I don't know. What if my, I don't even know. There are so many bad ways this could go. Like, what if I'm issued an order because I was mad at the bank? And so I was like, people can't go to the bank anymore. You just can't use the bank ever again. You have to put all your money in the drawer forever. Well, what if the next king is like, wow, that was really dumb. So why don't you, well, we can't fix it. Like, we're never allowed to use banks again. Like, you can't ever fix this. So the only way to fix it is to issue, is, well, Cam, so the only way to fix this would be to do what? If you can't take it back, what's the only other thing that you can do?
Not do it.
Well, Alexa, help her out. What's the only other, what's it, if you, if I can't take it, I need to fix this, but I can't take the first one back. So what do I, what can I do now?
I mean, either go through with it or override it.
You would have to, yeah. Cam, did you, you just figure it out? What do you think?
Yeah, like pretty much make another decree that says, forget about that one.
Yeah, you have to stack them. You have to do this again and again. So again, the only person qualified to make laws that never change is God, because his are done with wisdom and goodness and they bring him glory. When mankind tries to be God, it's a disaster. It doesn't make any sense, okay? Now, let's get into the next section here. So Vashti's never going to come before King A, but who all is this decree going to? Alexa, read verse 20.
Then when the king's edict is proclaimed throughout all his vast realm, all the women will respect their husbands from the least to the greatest.
Okay, here's why this is an issue. Something terrible has happened between Vashti and King A that is a huge embarrassment for King A. If you have something embarrassing happen to you, Abigail, what is the number one thing you need to not do? If something embarrassing has happened, what's the one thing that like you don't want to happen with that embarrassing fact?
Have people find out.
You don't want it to get out. And Alexa, what has King A just ordered? Where is this edict going?
It's going throughout the entire realm.
It literally is going to all 127 provinces to be sure that, like, if you, like, let's think here. Cam, what is the easiest way to make sure that this doesn't happen throughout the kingdom? What's the easiest way to be sure that nobody does what Vashti did?
Just keep it to yourself.
Don't tell anybody. Don't tell anybody that this happened. And in ordering the edict, now everybody knows that this has happened. So by trying to cover up this foolishness, it is now everywhere. It's being broadcasted to everyone, and it's never going to be repealed, right? So this absolute disaster has happened. Alexa, just read 20 one more time.
Then when the king's edict is proclaimed throughout all his vast realm, all the women will respect their husbands from the least to the greatest.
Okay, so notice how it went out of its way to talk about how big the kingdom is again. It's, there's some of the comedy in there. It's a reminder that the fact that this kingdom, like on the surface, we might be like, wow, this kingdom is huge. This is amazing. But the Bible's kind of reminding us that all this power and all this bigness isn't necessarily a good thing. It also is kind of showing this idea of like, it's giving this off this idea of like, oh, don't forget how vast it is. It's like satire. Like, it's like a comedy. Like, don't forget how big the kingdom is. More size isn't always a good thing. Like, the bigger your army is, the more expensive it is. The more stuff you have, the more obsessed with stuff you have and the less room you have and the more expensive it becomes, like the higher a job position you get, the more pressure is on you. Like there's all these, hi Sydney. It's just like this absolute disaster. And so the Bible is trying to remind us that worldly power is not all it's cracked up to be. These things that we obsess over, having the perfect body, having more than enough money, finding the perfect spouse, it always leads to disaster. It really does, because you put all this pressure on people and on yourself, and it just like washes you away. And so King A has all this power. He has all this influence. He has all this might, and his ego is hyper. He's not more depth of a person. It's actually made him more and more shallow. It's made him weaker. That's it. All the strength that he has actually weakened him. Does that make sense? All this accomplishment that he has had has just made him more anxious, has made him more shallow, more crazy. So it's a huge warning across the bow for us that all this stuff that we seek, we have to be very careful, because it's not all it's cracked up to be. It was never designed to make us complete. In fact, it's destroying King A's marriage and his life. Not that he may have even had a marriage to begin with, right? Okay, also, so the law basically, what's the law, Cam? Not only is Vashti out, but what do all the women in the country have to do, basically?
All women will honor their husbands.
How are you going to enforce that? Like, how are you going to prove that she is or isn't? Like, this is just, it's a joke. Like, from top to bottom, there's no way this thing is going to really do anything. Like, and especially especially in ancient days, like, how are you going to prove it? How are you going to enforce it? Like, how are you going to, this doesn't make any sense. Now, here's the other thing too. Have you ever maybe you've seen in the movies or like been in the car where like you're on your way to like have a family fun day or something, and your mom or dad gets really mad and they're like, hey, we are going to have fun today. We're going to enjoy this as a family. Now, Abigail, what is ironic about my tone there and the goal of the family fun day?
You're not having fun.
Yeah. As soon as I try to force it, it's not going to happen. All women, Cam, what's the problem here? All women will honor their husbands. What's wrong with that? What's ironic about that?
And you can't control or really enforce that. Yeah. You can't track it.
As soon as you try to make someone honor you, you lose any chance of being honored. Does that make sense? Like, you're going to honor people that you respect and that you love. So you can't force that on somebody, right? The law, and this is huge for us today too, laws cannot change the heart. If you hate your husband and now you're commanded to honor your husband, that's not really going to do anything. You know what I'm saying? But the same, and think about this, the same applies for our country. Think, we're going to go both ways. So one way, civil rights. African-Americans can now do all these things. Well, that doesn't mean that racist white people all of a sudden are like, well, shucks, I see the light now. You know what I mean? Like it's not going to do anything. The other way too. Now, I am, biblically speaking, I am 100% pro-life, against abortion. That's my whole, and we could talk about that later. But like, just because Roe v. Wade, if it is reversed tomorrow, like pro-choice people aren't going to be like, oh, I get it now. Like, if anything, they're going to dig that trench even deeper and get even, just like, now flip it the other way. If they said you could have an abortion up to the day before the birth or something, pro-life people aren't going to be like, well, gosh, that's the law. Okay. Like, you know, we think that because the Civil War happened, everyone stopped being racist, or because, or if Roe v. Wade is canceled, abortion will just go away. And I'm not saying that we shouldn't fight for those things, but we put such an emphasis on government power and government law. And it's good to fight for good laws, like 100%. But we cannot think that that's going to change people's hearts. You see what I'm saying? You can't legislate somebody's soul. You just can't do it. Which is why the church is infinitely important in how a country functions. Like, if I am adamantly racist, if I am adamantly pro-choice 100% all the way down, if Alexa passes a law that says, like, hey, you can't do those things, well, I might obey out of the law, which is good, but I'm not going to stop being racist. But if I start meeting with Cam and she starts to open the Bible with me and do life with me and show me that, you see what I'm saying? That gets into a place that the law just can't do. And not that, and again, I'm not saying that laws are bad by no stretch of the imagination, but they can't do everything that some people think they can do. Does that make sense? Now, I'll flip it the other way. Think about Revelation, right? The beast from the, oh gosh, I forget which one. I think it's the beast from the sea, which is government oppression against Christianity, which sounds really scary, and it is, but government outlawing Christianity has never worked. It's never worked. Not just because people are stubborn, but think about this story. God is absolutely sovereign the whole time. He is unstoppable throughout this entire story. We're already seeing his hand at work. And then also, Alexa, one of the things, Esther is the only book in the Bible where God's name is never mentioned, ever. Lord, God, none of it. But that's done intentionally to show, just because he's not mentioned, he is actively working throughout this whole story. And he can't be stopped. I mean, look at King A. He's a fool. He's in no way going to be able to compete with God and how he's going to save his people, right? So anyway, just a little side note on government, the power of government, the power of legislation. Let's finish this out. Abigail, can you read 21 and 22?
Yep. This advice pleased the king and the princes, and the king did as
Mamukin
proposed. He sent letters to all the royal provinces, to every province in its own script, and to every people in its own language, that every man be master in his own household and speak according to the language of his people.
Perfect. So first of all, notice the king does as Mamukin proposed. So who really is the king, right? Another example of King A being 100% passive. He's just going to do whatever someone suggests. If you can kind of schmooze the king, then you're the king. King A is totally passive, okay? And here's the other thing too, and let's back up one more time. Cam, what is the overall goal of this whole chapter? What is King A trying to get everyone to do?
To unite together before they go to war.
He is in no way a leader at all. He can't lead his family. He can't lead his own cabinet. Fun fact, in history, we know, I mean, this is, you can look this up anywhere. King A loses the war with Greece and it decimates his empire. Okay. And it's not hard to see why. Okay. He's not a leader. He's totally passive. What's interesting too, so he sends letters to all the royal provinces, every province in its own script. So now everyone knows what a disaster this was. So ironically, this day has served to push people further away from him. Does that make sense? They are now less inclined to follow him. Whereas if he had just kept his mouth shut, now think about this. Let's say King A is not insane and he doesn't have this crazy fragile ego. His wife, she doesn't disrespect him. He disrespects her. His wife refuses to come before him. And he quietly pulls her aside and apologizes, and they talk it out, and this whole thing is resolved. He's probably going to get all the support he needs that day. But instead, he's power hungry with a fragile ego, and he completely topples his chances at going to war with Greece. If he hadn't been, this whole thing was this push for power. And ultimately, this push for power, you're not going to disrespect me like that, that cost him all his power. Does that make sense? His arrogance. Look at me. Look at how powerful I am. Follow me into war. I'm so amazing. My wife's not even going to disrespect me. I'll show you. And he sends the edict out to the whole country. And now they know he's a fool, so they won't follow him. If he hadn't been so power obsessed, he would have had all the power he needed to go to war with Greece. Does that make sense? His own pride toppled his chances at victory. One of the giant themes of Esther is all the, and we talked about this last week, all the forces that are against Christianity are actually going to topple themselves. We are more than conquerors. The disaster that you bring on yourself or that Satan brings on you is just going to push you closer to God, which is the opposite of what Satan wants. Satan's ultimate goal was to kill Jesus. Well, Jesus can't be resurrected from the dead until he dies. So Satan, by killing Jesus, ultimately caused Jesus, I mean, didn't cause, but started in motion the things that ended up resurrecting Jesus, which saved all Christians, which is the last thing Satan wants. So Esther is this preview of the cross, of all the powers of darkness crashing in on God and his people, and they ultimately just result in them being delivered. Just a quick story. There's a theologian, I can't remember the guy's name, but he gets cancer, and it's going to take his life, and he's been studying the Bible for like 50 years. In the 2 months that he spends in the hospital bed, he just learns so much. You know how you can learn about somebody, but then you are with them and you experience them and you learn way more about them that way? He said in one of his memoirs, he said, the 2 months that I spent in the hospital bed, I learned more about God than I ever did when I read about him while I was healthy. So even cancer is this butler that draws people to God. You see how this darkness actually ended up bringing this guy closer to the light than ever before, which is the last thing that darkness wants. King A's pride in his empire, his obsession with his empire, cost him his empire. When in reality, if he had been less obsessed with power, he would have had all the power he needed to go to war. You see what I'm saying? That's why Esther is a comedy. This irony is thick throughout the whole book. So there's a lot of stuff going on here. Let's look through this. So, okay, here's the other thing too. Cam, can you just read 22?
He sent letters to all the royal provinces, to each province in its own script, and to each ethnic group in its own language, that every man should be master of his own house and speak in the language of his own people.
Every man is to be the master of his own house. This is, again, the breakdown between male and female relationships. It is this idea of male headship is not the same thing as male dominance. That's what people think it is, and they hate it. And they should hate male dominance. And that's what the Persians are trying to do. The man is the master in the household. Well, you've got all these wives now who are thinking, well, I married a husband. I didn't marry a slave master. I don't want a slave master. And so by trying to secure a good marriage through dominance, he is destroying these marriages. You see what I'm saying? He's making it worse. You just created a whole army of Vashtis. And the whole point was to not do that, right? This toxic masculinity, right? Christ shows us that true male headship comes through self-sacrifice and honesty. Like Ahasuerus, as the leader of the family, he should have come down from his throne and honestly communicated and apologized and strove to sacrifice for his wife. And now she's going to want to be close to him. Like, it's just, it all works together. But self-sacrifice and honesty, that sounds a lot like love. So headship is a form of love, not a form of dominance. And we get into that later. But think about it. Like, this horrible king who knows nothing about marriage has just destroyed his followers' marriages because of his poor view of marriage. Christ, as our king, has this beautiful view of marriage. In fact, he's the creator of marriage, Genesis 2. And since our king has this wonderful view of marriage, his followers now are impacted by that. We seek, husbands and wives both seek, to sacrificially serve each other because Jesus sacrificed himself for us. So it all flows, it's from the top down, right? It flows down. So why all of this? Like, why, we haven't even met Esther yet, right? Why go to all the trouble to show us all these things? It's showing us this is the world that Esther and Mordecai are in. These are the problems that they're going to face. So somewhat, let's do like two or three. What are some of the problems that Esther and Mordecai are going to have to face based on this chapter? You don't have to know anything about the story, but just based on chapter one, what are some of the problems you think that Esther and Mordecai are going to have to deal with? Alexa, take a swing.
Oddly dominant men.
Yes, that's a great way to say that. So a culture of men who are deeply obsessed, and it's not like good men. These are men deeply like shallow egos, hypersensitive, and especially hypersensitive to what? To how women act towards them. See what I'm saying? So that's one thing that Esther's going to have to navigate. What's another thing that's just crazy here that Esther and Mordecai are going to have to figure out how to deal with? Abigail, take a swing. What's a problem based on this chapter? What is something that's like, man, this is going to be really difficult to figure out?
The people have nobody like to show them what true leadership looks like.
Yeah. Yeah. The king is insane. Yeah. I mean, literally, this is going to be a disaster. So they're going to have to figure that out. And then the last thing here, this whole episode has been in the context of a giant what? What's been going on for 180 days? What's been going on? Go ahead. Yeah, this massive throwdown. This is a very, and not that going to parties is sinful. I'm not trying to make you guys like whatever. But this is obviously a society with no moral compass, right? Think about the only law that we've seen is a law that wives have to obey their husbands or something. And it wasn't even done based on justice. It was done because the king was upset and the king didn't even do it. So there's no moral compass in this entire society. It's a culture that is completely male dominated, where women are judged by their bodies and men are judged by their power. And all the government officials seem to be hyper shallow. Man, aren't you glad that we've come so far from that? Gosh, again, the Bible is totally relevant to our society. And I'm not trying to attack like all politicians or all men, or, but you get what I'm saying. Here's the key here. Esther's going to have to use a great deal of wisdom here. You can't just bludgeon these people because they're just going to kick you out. That's what Vashti did. And I'm not hating on Vashti, but Vashti just pushed right back. And so she's out. She's been canceled. She's been completely eliminated from the picture. If Esther wants to do any good for her people, she can't just come out swinging. You see what I'm saying? She's got to be wise. Now, that doesn't mean that all her decisions are right. Esther is not an example for women to follow. But David, King David, is not an example for all men to follow. Do I need to have an affair with my wife and then an affair with someone other than my wife and then kill that woman's husband in battle? Because that's what King David did. You know what I mean? Like, they're not, and we'll see this too. The Old Testament is not this idea of all these characters are good examples for us to follow. They point to the only good example to follow, which is Jesus. Now, there are qualities that we follow, but still. And in the same way, we as Christians living in a society that is sinful, that is with political unrest, with leaders who we question at the very least, right? We have to show wisdom as Christians. We can't just come out swinging at people, but we also don't need to be like totally afraid of everything. Like Esther and Mordecai are involved in their society. They're in the midst of their world. They haven't completely removed themselves. Now, sometimes we need to do that. But again, how do you know when to? Well, that's where wisdom comes in. As Christians, we have to wisely interact with society, okay? Here's the other, believers have to live in a world, in a sinful world with wisdom. Here's the last thing. The whole world gives this idea of the Persian Empire. Look at how accomplished we are. We are the most technologically advanced age in history, which I don't like that phrase because every age in history is the most advanced technological age in history. Now, we're more advanced than we were 50 years ago and 100 years ago, but in the year 1500, that was the most technologically. You see what I'm saying? It's all relative. So we try to give off this impression that we're like Persia. Look at how dominant. Look at how wealthy. Look at how powerful. Look at how advanced. But all you have to do is open up the first page and you see how insane life in Persia is, how unstable, how broken, how sinful it is, which reminds us that the world is always going to show this veneer of, look at how good we are. Look at how perfect this is. Why would you want to be a Christian when you can have all these things? Well, all these things don't really seem to be that great. All you have to do is just look beyond skin deep. You know what I mean? So when we're tempted to go the way of the world, to do whatever you think should be done outside of marriage, to side with political beliefs that, yeah, maybe I don't agree with them totally, but it's the way the world's going, to, you know, whatever, you fill in the blank, right? To just gun for the money and not for relationships or for accomplishment or for winning the crowd versus winning those closest to you. Think back to King A as a cautionary tale and remember that the Bible, God is reminding us that the world is not all that's cracked up to be yet because sin has broken it. So we follow Jesus really did know what he was talking about. He really, really did. And more than talk, he came and sacrificed himself for us so that we could go and do likewise. The world is in no way, King A is in no way going to lower himself and sacrifice himself, right? Come fight for me, right? But Jesus does the reverse. Jesus sacrifices himself for all of his people. He's the king we actually need. Great job. Questions? We're done with Esther chapter 1. Raise the roof. Good job, guys. You guys don't even know what that means. That's great. So congrats. Job well done. Questions, comments? Everybody good? Everybody on the same page? We're going to shoot for 6 o'clock. So again, no Zoom this Sunday. We're going to shoot for 6 o'clock one more time next week. We're going to try 6 o'clock one more time next week, see how it goes. And then after that, we might make some adjustments. And then our first hangout is going to be March the 11th, okay, in person, March the 11th. It's going to just going to be super fun, okay? Cool. All right, good to go. Let me pray us out, and then we'll be done, okay? God, thank you so much for today. Thank you for the chance just to be in your house and to chat. Thank you for the gift of technology. And we thank you, Lord, that you are a good and wise king who cares for us and loves us and wants what is best for us. I thank you for these students who take the time to come and study your word. We thank you that it will never return void. That will always help us. So help us now to live out what your word says and to draw near to you. In Jesus' name, amen. All right, love you guys, and we'll talk to you later, okay? All right, bye.